In the late afternoon, it rained, and the entire world was dark gray. He stood in the hall of his house, putting on his badge with the orange salamander burning across it. He stood looking up at the air conditioning vent in the hall for a long time. His wife, in the TV parlor, paused long enough from reading her script to glance up. "Hey," she said, "the man's thinking." "Yes," he said. "I wanted to talk to you." He paused. "You took all the pills in your bottle last night."
"Oh, I wouldn't do that," she said, surprised.
The bottle was empty.
"I wouldn't do a thing like that. Why would I do a thing like that?" she said.
"Maybe you took two pills and forgot, and took two more and forgot again, and took two more and were so dopey you kept right on until you had 30 or 40 of them in you."
"Heck," she said, "why would I want to go and do a silly thing like that for?"
"I don't know," he said. She was quite obviously waiting for him to go.
"I didn't do that," she said.
"Never in a billion years." "All right, if you say so," he said. "That's what the lady said." She turned back to her script. "What's on this afternoon?" he asked, tiredly. She didn't look up from the script again.
"Well, this is a play, comes on the wall-to-wall circuit in 10 minutes. They mailed me my part this morning. I sent in some box tops. They write the script with one part missing. It's a new idea. The homemaker, that's me, is the missing part. When it comes time for the missing lines, they all look at me out of the three walls, and I say the lines. Here, for instance, the man says, 'What do you think of this whole idea, Helen?' And he looks at me sitting here center stage, see? And I say,
she paused and ran her finger under a line on the script.
"I think that's fine." And then they go on with the play until he says, "Do you agree with that, Helen?" And I say, "I sure do." Isn't that fun, guy?
He stood in the hall, looking at her.
"It's sure fun," she said.
"What's the play about?"
"I just told you there are these people named Bob and Ruth and Helen."
"Oh,
it's really fun. It'll be even more fun when we can afford to have the fourth wall installed. How long you figure before we save up and get the fourth wall torn out and a fourth wall TV put in? It's only $2,000.
"That's 1/3 of my yearly pay."
"It's only $2,000, she replied. "And I should think you'd consider me sometimes. If we had a fourth wall, why, it'd be just like this room wasn't ours at all, but all kinds of exotic people's rooms. We could do without a few things."
"We're already doing without a few things to pay for the third wall. It was put in only 2 months ago. Remember?"
"Is that all it was?"
She sat looking at him for a long moment.
"Well, goodbye, dear."
"Goodbye," he said. He stopped and turned around. "Does it have a happy ending?"
"I haven't read that far."
He walked over, read the last page, nodded, folded the script, and handed it back to her. He walked out of the house into the rain. The rain was thinning away, and the girl was walking in the center of the sidewalk with her head up, and the few drops falling on her face. She smiled when she saw Montag.
"Hello."
He said hello, and then said, "What are you up to now?"
"I'm still crazy. The rain feels good. I love to walk in it."
"I don't think I'd like that," he said.
"You might if you tried."
"I never have." She licked her lips.
"Rain even tastes good."
"What do you do? Go around trying everything once?" he asked.
"Sometimes, twice."
She looked at something in her hand. "What have you got there?" he said.
"I guess it's the last of the dandelions this year. I didn't think I'd find one on the lawn this late. Have you ever heard of rubbing it under your chin? Look."
She touched her chin with the flower, laughing.
"If it rubs off,
it means I'm in love."
"Has it?"
He could hardly do anything else but look.
"Well,"
she said, "you're yellow under there."
"Fine. Let's try you now. It won't work for me. Here. Before he could move, she had put the dandelion under his chin. He drew back, and she laughed. Hold still. She peered under his chin and frowned. Well, he said. What a shame, she said. You're not in love with anyone. Yes, I am. It doesn't show. I am very much in love. He tried to conjure up a face to fit the words, but there was no face. I am. Oh, please don't look that way. It's that dandelion, he said. You've used it all up on yourself. That's why it won't work for me. Of course, that must be it. Oh, now I've upset you. I can see I have. I'm sorry. Really, I am. She touched his elbow. No, no, he said quickly. I'm all right. I've got to be going, so say you forgive me. I don't want you angry with me. I'm not angry. Upset, yes. I've got to go see my psychiatrist now. They make me go. I make up things to say. I don't know what he thinks of me. He says I'm a regular onion. I keep him busy peeling away the layers. I'm inclined to believe you need the psychiatrist, said Montague. You don't mean that. He took a breath and let it out, and at last said, No, I don't mean that. The psychiatrist wants to know why I go out and hike around in the forests and watch the birds and collect butterflies. I'll show you my collection some day. Good. They want to know what I do with my time. I tell them that sometimes I just sit and think. But I won't tell them that. I've got them running. And sometimes I tell them I like to put my head back like this and let the rain fall in my mouth. It tastes just like wine. Have you ever tried it? No, I... You have forgiven me, haven't you? Yes. He thought about it. Yes, I have. God knows why. You're peculiar, you're aggravating, yet you're easy to forgive. You say you're 17? Well, next month. How odd, how strange. And my wife 30, and yet you seem so much older at times. I can't get over it. You're peculiar yourself, Mr. Montague. Sometimes I even forget you're a fireman. Now, may I make you angry again? Go ahead. How did it start? How did you get into it? How did you pick your work, and how did you happen to think to take the job you have? You're not like the others. I've seen a few, I know. When I talk, you look at me. When I said something about the moon, you looked at the moon last night. The others would never do that. The others would walk off and leave me talking, or threaten me. No one has time anymore for anyone else. You're one of the few who put up with me. That's why I think it's so strange you're a fireman. It just doesn't seem right for you, somehow. He felt his body divide itself into a hotness and a coldness, a softness and a hardness, a trembling and a not trembling, the two halves grinding one upon the other. You'd better run on to your appointment, he said. And she ran off and left him standing there in the rain. Only after a long time did he move. And then, very slowly, as he walked, he tilted his head back in the rain for just a few moments and opened his mouth. The mechanical hound slept but did not sleep, lived but did not live in its gently humming, gently vibrating, softly illuminated kennel back in a dark corner of the firehouse. The dim light of 1 in the morning, the moonlight from the open sky framed through the great window, touched here and there on the brass and the copper and the steel of the faintly trembling beast. Light flickered on bits of ruby glass and on sensitive capillary hairs in the nylon-brushed nostrils of the creature that quivered gently, gently, its 8 legs spidered under it on rubber-padded paws. Montague slid down the brass pole, He went out to look at the city, and the clouds had cleared away completely, and he lit a cigarette and came back to bend down and look at the hound. It was like a great bee come home from some field where the honey is full of poisoned wildness, of insanity and nightmare, its body crammed with that over-rich nectar. And now it was sleeping the evil out of itself. "Hello," whispered Montag, fascinated as always with the dead beast, the living beast. Nights, when things got dull, which was every night, the men slid down the brass poles and set the ticking combinations of the olfactory system of the hound, and let loose rats in the firehouse areaway, and sometimes chickens, and sometimes cats that would have to be drowned anyway, and there would be betting to see which of the cats or chickens or rats the hound would seize first. The animals were turned loose. 3 seconds later, the game was done. The rat, cat, or chicken caught halfway across the areaway, gripped by gentling paws, while a 4-inch hollow steel needle plunged down from the proboscis of the hound to inject massive jolts of morphine or procaine. The pawn was then tossed in the incinerator. A new game began. Montag stayed upstairs most nights when this went on. There had been a time 2 years ago when he had bet with the best of them and lost a week's salary and faced Mildred's insane anger, which showed itself in veins and blotches. But now nights he lay in his bunk, face turned to the wall, listening to the whoops of laughter below and the piano string scurry of rat feet, the violin squeaking of mice, and the great shadowing motion silence of the hound, leaping out like a moth in the raw light, finding, holding its victim, inserting the needle and going back to its kennel to die as if a switch had been turned. Montag touched the muzzle. The hound growled. Montag jumped back. The hound half rose in its kennel and looked at him with green-blue neon light flickering in its suddenly activated eyebulbs. It growled again, a strange, rasping combination of electrical sizzle, a frying sound, a scraping of metal, a turning of cogs that seemed rusty and ancient with suspicion. "No, no, boy," said Montag, his heart pounding. He saw the silver needle extend upon the air an inch, pull back, extend, pull back. The growl simmered in the beast, and it looked at him. Montag backed up. The hound took a step from its kennel. Montag grabbed the brass pole with one hand. The pole, reacting, slid upward and took him through the ceiling quietly. He stepped off in the half-lit deck of the upper level. He was trembling, and his face was green-white. Below, the hound had sunk back down upon its 8 incredible insect legs and was humming to itself again, its multifaceted eyes at peace. Montag stood, letting the fears pass by the drop hole. Behind him, 4 men at a card table under a green-lidded light in the corner glanced briefly but said nothing. Only the man with the captain's hat and the sign of the phoenix on his hat at last, curious, his playing cards in his thin hand, talked across the long room. "Montag!" "It doesn't like me," said Montag.
"What, the hound?"
The captain studied his cards.
"Come off it. It doesn't like or dislike. It just functions. It's like a lesson in ballistics. It has a trajectory we decide on for it. It follows through. It targets itself, homes itself, and cuts off. It's only copper wire, storage batteries, and electricity."
Montag swallowed. "Its calculators can be set to any combination. So many amino acids, so much sulfur, so much butterfat and alkaline. Right?"
"We all know that."
"All of those chemical balances and percentages on all of us here in the house are recorded in the master file downstairs. It would be easy for someone to set up a partial combination on the hound's memory, a touch of amino acids, perhaps. That would account for what the animal did just now. Reacted toward me."
"Hell," said the captain.
Irritated, but not completely angry, Just enough memory set up in it by someone so it growled when I touched it.
Who would do a thing like that? Asked the captain. You haven't any enemies here, Guy?
None that I know of.
We'll have the hound checked by our technicians tomorrow.
This isn't the first time it's threatened me, said Montag. Last month it happened twice.
We'll fix it up. Don't worry.
But Montag did not move, and only stood thinking of the ventilator grill in the hall at home, and what lay hidden behind the grill. If someone here in the firehouse knew about the ventilator, then mightn't they tell the hound? The captain came over to the drop hole and gave Montag a questioning glance. I was just figuring, said Montag. What does the hound think about down there, nights? Is it coming alive on us? Really? It makes me cold.
It doesn't think anything we don't want it to think.
That's sad, said Montag quietly, because all we put into it is hunting and finding and killing. What a shame if that's all it can ever know. Beatty snorted gently.
Hell! It's a fine bit of craftsmanship, a good rifle that can fetch its own target and guarantees the bullseye every time.
That's why, said Montag, I wouldn't want to be its next victim.
Why? You got a guilty conscience about something?
Montag glanced up swiftly. Beatty stood there looking at him steadily with his eyes, while his mouth opened and began to laugh, very softly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days, and as many times he came out of the house, and Clarice was there somewhere in the world. Once he saw her shaking a walnut tree. Once he saw her sitting on the lawn knitting a blue sweater. 3 or 4 times he found a bouquet of late flowers on his porch, or a handful of chestnuts in a little sack, or some autumn leaves neatly pinned to a sheet of white paper and thumbtacked to his door. Every day Clarice walked him to the corner. One day it was raining, the next it was clear. The day after that the wind blew strong, and the day after that it was mild and calm, and the day after that calm day was a day like the furnace of summer, and Clarice with her face all sunburnt by late afternoon. Why is it, he said one time at the subway entrance, I feel I've known you for so many years. Because I like you, she said, and I don't want anything from you, and because we know each other. You make me feel very old and very much like a father. Now you explain, she said, why you haven't any daughters like me, if you love children so much.
I don't know.
You're joking. I mean, he stopped and shook his head. Well, my wife, she just never wanted any children at all. The girl stopped smiling. I'm sorry. I really thought you were having fun at my expense. I'm a fool. No, no, he said. It was a good question. It's been a long time since anyone cared enough to ask. A good question. Let's talk about something else. Have you ever smelled old leaves? Don't they smell like cinnamon? Here, smell.
Why, yes, it is like cinnamon in a way.
She looked at him with her clear, dark eyes. You always seem shocked.
It's just, I haven't had time.
Did you look at the stretched-out billboards like I told you?
I think so.
Yes.
He had to laugh.
Your laugh sounds much nicer than it did.
Does it?
Much more relaxed. He felt at ease and comfortable. Why aren't you in school? I see you every day wandering around.
Oh, they don't miss me, she said. I'm antisocial, they say. I don't mix.
It's so strange. I'm very social indeed. It all depends on what you mean by social, doesn't it? Social to me means talking to you about things like this. She rattled some chestnuts that had fallen off the tree in the front yard. Or talking about how strange the world is. Being with people is nice. but I don't think it's social to get a bunch of people together and then not let them talk. Do you? An hour of TV class, an hour of basketball or baseball or running, another hour of transcription history or painting pictures and more sports, but do you know, we never ask questions. Or at least, most don't. They just run the answers at you, bing, bing, bing. And us sitting there for 4 more hours of film teacher. That's not social to me at all. It's a lot of funnels and a lot of water poured down the spout and out the bottom, and them telling us it's wine when it's not. They run us so ragged by the end of the day we can't do anything but go to bed, or head for a fun park to bully people around, break window panes in the window smasher place, or wreck cars in the car wrecker place with the big steel ball. Or go out in the cars and race on the streets, trying to see how close you can get to lampposts, playing chicken and knock hubcaps. I guess I'm everything they say I am, all right. I haven't any friends. That's supposed to prove I'm abnormal. But everyone I know is either shouting or dancing around like wild or beating up one another. Do you notice how people hurt each other nowadays? You sound so very old. Sometimes I'm ancient. I'm afraid of children my own age. They kill each other. Did it always used to be that way? My uncle says no. 6 of my friends have been shot in the last year alone. 10 of them died in car wrecks. I'm afraid of them, and they don't like me because I'm afraid. My uncle says his grandfather remembered when children didn't kill each other, but that was a long time ago when they had things different. They believed in responsibility, my uncle says. Do you know, I'm responsible. I was spanked when I needed it years ago, and I do all the shopping and house cleaning by hand. But most of all, she said, I like to watch people. Sometimes I ride the subway all day and look at them and listen to them. I just want to figure out who they are and what they want and where they're going. Sometimes I even go to the fun parks and ride in the jet cars when they race on the edge of town at midnight, and the police don't care as long as they're insured. As long as everyone has 10,000 insurance, everyone's happy. Sometimes I sneak around and listen in subways. Or I listen at soda fountains. And you know what?
What?
People don't talk about anything.
Oh, they must.
No, not anything. They name a lot of cars, or clothes, or swimming pools, mostly, and say, how swell. But they all say the same things, and nobody says anything different from anyone else. And most of the time in the caves they have the joke boxes on, and the same jokes most of the time, or the musical wall lit, and all the colored patterns running up and down, but it's only color and all abstract. And at the museums, have you ever been? All abstract. That's all there is now. My uncle says it was different once. A long time back, sometimes pictures said things, or even showed people.
Your uncle
must be a remarkable man. He is. He certainly is. Well, I gotta be going. Goodbye, Mr. Montague.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days. The firehouse.
Montague, you shin that pole like a bird up a tree.
3rd day.
Montague, I see you came in the back door this time.
The hound bother you?
No,
no.
4th day.
Montague, a funny thing. Heard tell this morning. Fireman in Seattle purposely set a mechanical hound to do his own chemical complex and let it loose.
What kind of suicide would you call that? 5, 6, 7 days. And then Clarice was gone. He didn't know what there was about the afternoon, but it was not seeing her somewhere in the world.
The lawn was empty, the trees empty, the street empty. And while at first he did not even know he missed her or was even looking for her, the fact was that by the time he reached the subway there were vague stirrings of disease in him. Something was the matter. His routine had been disturbed. A simple routine, true, established in a short few days, and yet he almost turned back to make the walk again, to give her time to appear. He was certain if he tried the same route, everything would work out fine. But it was late, and the arrival of his train put a stop to his plan. The flutter of cards, motion of hands, of eyelids, the drone of the time voice in the firehouse ceiling. 1:35, Thursday morning, November 4th. 1:36, 1:37 a.m. The tick of the playing cards on the greasy tabletop. All the sounds came to Montag behind his closed eyes, behind the barrier he had momentarily erected. He could feel the firehouse full of glitter and shine and silence, of brass colors, the colors of coins, of gold, of silver. The unseen men across the table were sighing on their cards, waiting. 1:45. The voice clock mourned out the cold hour of a cold morning of a still colder year.
"What's wrong, Montag?"
Montag opened his eyes. A radio hummed somewhere.
"War may be declared any hour. This country stands ready to defend its..."
The firehouse trembled as a great flight of jet planes whistled a single note across the black morning sky. Montag blinked. Beatty was looking at him as if he were a museum statue. At any moment Beatty might rise and walk about him, touching, exploring his guilt and self-consciousness. Guilt? What guilt was that?
"Your play, Montag."
Montag looked at these men whose faces were sunburnt by 1,000 real and 10,000 imaginary fires, whose work flushed their cheeks and fevered their eyes. These men who looked steadily into their platinum igniter flames as they lit their eternally burning black pipes. They and their charcoal hair and soot-colored brows and bluish ash-smeared cheeks where they had shaven close. But their heritage showed. Montag started up, his mouth opened. Had he ever seen a fireman that didn't have black hair, black brows, a fiery face, and a blue steel shaved but unshaved look? These men were all mirror images of himself. Were all firemen picked then for their looks as well as their proclivities? The color of cinders and ash about them, and the continual smell of burning from their pipes? Captain Beatty there, rising in thunderheads of tobacco smoke, Beatty opening a fresh tobacco packet, crumpling the cellophane into a sound of fire. Montag looked at the cards in his own hands.
I've been thinking about the fire last week, about the man whose library we fixed. What happened to him?
They took him screaming off to the asylum.
He wasn't insane.
Beatty arranged his cards quietly.
Any man's insane who thinks he can fool the government and us.
I've tried to imagine, said Montag, just how it would feel. I mean, to have firemen burn our houses and our books.
We haven't any books.
But if we did have some.
You got some?
Beatty blinked slowly.
No.
Montag gazed beyond them to the wall with the typed lists of 1,000,000 forbidden books. Their names leapt in fire, burning down the years under his axe and his hose, which sprayed not water but kerosene. No. But in his mind, a cool wind started up and blew out of the ventilator grill at home, softly, softly chilling his face. And again he saw himself in a green park talking to an old man, a very old man, and the wind from in the park was cold, too. Montag hesitated. Was it always like this? The firehouse, our work? I mean, well, once upon a time.
Once upon a time, Petey said. What kind of talk is that?
Fool, thought Montag to himself. You'll give it away. At the last fire, a book of fairy tales, he glanced at a single line. I mean, he said, in the old days, before homes were completely fireproofed. Suddenly it seemed a much younger voice was speaking for him. He opened his mouth, and it was Clarice McClellan saying, didn't firemen prevent fires rather than stoke them up and get them going?
That's rich.
Stoneman and Black drew forth their rule books, which also contained brief histories of the firemen of America, and laid them out where Montag, though long familiar with them, might read. Established, 1790, to burn English-influenced books in the colonies. First fireman, Benjamin Franklin. Rule 1. Answer the alarm swiftly. 2. Start the fire swiftly. 3. Burn everything. 4. Report back to firehouse immediately. 5. Stand alert for other alarms. Everyone watched Montag. He did not move. The alarm sounded. The bell in the ceiling kicked itself 200 times. Suddenly there were 4 empty chairs. The cards fell in a flurry of snow. The brass pole shivered. The men were gone. Montag sat in his chair. Below, the orange dragon coughed to life. Montag slid down the pole like a man in a dream. The mechanical hound leapt up in its kennel, its eyes all green flame.
Montag, you forgot your helmet!
He seized it off the wall behind him, ran, leapt, and they were off, the night wind hammering about their siren scream and their mighty metal thunder.